You are listening to an American Free Press podcast.
Joining me on the line is Len Richmond, who's made a film called What If Cannabis Cured Cancer? Len, thanks for joining us today.
You're welcome.
Len, I want to talk about this movie, but before we do, for the benefit of the listeners, just give them a little background about who you are.
Basically, I'm a comedy writer, so this has nothing to do kind of with where I came from. I lived in England for 18 years, and I wrote sitcoms for the BBC and different television companies there. And I was kind of known for putting marijuana in my sitcoms. I was already an advocate for it, but not from a medical point of view, just because I thought it really enlightened people and helped them communicate. I'll give you, for instance, I'm gay, and I have a boyfriend who we've been together for 11 years, and he's 30 years younger than me. What we have in common is marijuana. It completely bridges the age between us. We look at television the same way. We have the same attitude toward life. We laugh at the same jokes, and it's because we're both potheads.
Mm-hmm.
So normally, there wouldn't be a lot in common with somebody 30 years younger than me. I'm 69. He's 39. He's from a completely different generation. But pot does affect your brain in terms of the openness that you see life with, the fact that you're not necessarily conservative and tied to the past in terms of what you believe the rules of life are. It kind of makes you think anything's possible, and your mind can go in all different ways. And creatively, I don't think I've ever written a script. I've been a very successful script writer all my life that I wasn't stoned. In fact, I wouldn't trust a script that I hadn't written, at least looked at when I was stoned. Usually, my way of writing was I'd get an assignment, I would light candles around my computer, I'd put on trippy music, I'd smoke a big joint, and I'd start writing. And I wouldn't censor what was coming out. I would let my imagination and the dope do their trick, which means even though I thought I knew what the script was about, I'd let it go anywhere. I'd let the character take me anywhere they wanted. And when I was stoned, they would go to some very interesting places. Then the next morning, I would look at what I wrote, and I would say 70% of it was crap, but 30% of it was brilliant because I had really thought of things that I probably wouldn't have thought of, which were fascinating. It broke the mold of where you thought the script was going to go. And I'd edit it out, and then I'd get stoned the next night and edit it out. And eventually, I'd have a very original, funny script. Also, I think the fact that I write comedy, it helps that I wrote when I was stoned. So I've always been a huge advocate of marijuana, but I never really knew about the health aspects of it. I didn't realize that I was actually doing my body good. Who knew that I was helping prevent cancer, Alzheimer's, diabetes, a host of other diseases? So making the film What If Cannabis Cured Cancer was quite an adventure for me. I learned there's a lot more to cannabis than I ever realized.
I learned that too, because I didn't know most of the stuff that was in there. And I want to talk a little bit about the film.
Mm-hmm.
What we're talking about here really isn't anything new. I mean, marijuana has been used for how long?
In my film, I talk about it actually being influential in caveman days, that when early man discovered pot, it possibly influenced cave art and other mental processes. And there's a theory that marijuana was really covering the earth. It grew prolifically, and it really didn't take much water. It didn't matter how much sun it was getting. It's just this amazing plant that can just survive in anything. So there was a lot of it around, and when they were feeding their fires, they would use cannabis. This is the theory. They would use cannabis as the fuel to feed the fires. So they're all sitting around the fires getting stoned, not knowing that they're getting stoned, but they're getting stoned. There's a theory that it actually did affect the growth of early man's minds. It couldn't help it, but if you're getting stoned every night around your fire, that it has some effect on expanding the way that you think about your world around you.
The movie is narrated by, and I know this fellow, Peter Coyote. How did you hook up with him?
Well, it's interesting. Peter actually is not a stoner. He's in recovery, as they say, and I think it's very unfortunate that Alcoholics Anonymous and all these different organizations forbid you to do marijuana, because in my experience, not personally, but with the other addicts that I know, it actually helps them stay off the more harmful things.
Right.
But he very much believes in the freedom for people to use it if they want to. And I guess he just responded to it. I have to say, I'm a very pushy guy. So
you don't sound it.
Well, I do it in a very charming way. I don't really take no for an answer if I really want somebody. So I pursued it till I got him. And he recorded in a very interesting way, because he was up in Marin and I'm down in Los Angeles. So we set him up in a recording studio there, and I was kind of on the phone. And I said, well, you've read the script? And he said, no, I haven't read the script. I have no idea what this is about, other than it's about cannabis. I said, oh. He said, no, I don't like reading the script before I go into the recording studio, so it sounds fresh. Mm-hmm. So as he narrated, it was the first time he had ever heard those lines.
Wow.
And yet he came out with such conviction. Obviously, it's a technique. He's done so many narrations of PBS documentaries.
Yeah, he's very good.
Yeah, he's so experienced. He understands that. And I would interrupt him once in a while. You know, he'd say, was that a good take? And I said, well, you know, I want passion in there. This really is the most amazing drug that's ever been discovered. And I'd like that in the narration, which he did. He would do different takes and he'd get more passionate. And we never used any of those takes because it was too much. He knew what he was doing. I shouldn't have even directed him.
Right.
There was a lot more passion in his voice than I even realized. When you put it with the images, it really works well.
Yeah, it was very good. And right on the cover, you have here a little write-up by Andrew Weil.
No kidding. I know.
Yeah. How did that happen?
My boyfriend's father is a huge fan of Andrew Weil, and it actually has improved my whole relationship with him that I got Andrew Weil to do that quote. Oh. It was like he's thinking, wow, I guess Len's not just a silly pothead. He got Andrew Weil to actually come on the side. I knew somebody in the cannabis movement who knew him, and we tried to get him a DVD. It sat there for probably about 6 months. He never looked at it. But being a comedy writer, I kept sending him funny emails, little cute emails, trying to remind him to see it. And I guess I finally broke him down, and he watched it. And he loved it, which was great, because even when I made the film, even though the film is full of doctors and scientists, I thought other people would disagree with it that were in the medical profession. So it was very heartening to have a doctor of his caliber say, you got it right. You got the science right. This is true. I believe this all my life. Somebody's finally put it down on film. So the reason the film took off commercially, originally, this is a film that my friends and I made on our computer.
Right.
This is not something where we had a big budget. I think my total budget was like $7,000 for the film. Anybody could have made this film. Well, almost anybody. So he decided to write about it on the Huffington Post. All of a sudden, the film took off. It was huge. Turned out from like selling 5 copies a week to hundreds of copies a day, to the point where I actually had to hire people to suddenly set up a business to try to get all the copies out. Once it got out in the real media world through the Huffington Post, it has stayed a bestseller. It's just been translated into French and German and Dutch and Spanish, and we have a distributor in Europe who's distributing to all these countries in Europe. It's going to take on a whole new life. And the other thing with the film is it's been embraced by different political pot organizations, so they're setting up screenings in churches and community centers and libraries and things, and just putting up posters around town and inviting people. I realized what I had done with the film, kind of subconsciously, I guess, is I had given people who smoke pot a reason to smoke pot and a reason to feel good about themselves. And they've been waiting for this. And it's all true. So it's not like I'm making up something saying Jesus in heaven wants you to smoke pot. This is all science. And it's saying that what you're doing is good for your body. Now, I'm 69. I look like I'm in my 40s.
Right.
I thought it was just good genes. But in making the film, I realized that marijuana is an anti-aging drug that would put Helena Rubinstein out of business. I mean, I think this is the way it's really going to get out into the great unwashed masses, is when they realize that if you smoke enough pot, you don't get wrinkles. I have skin that's like wrinkle-free, and I have been a pot smoker since I've been in my 20s. It's an anti-inflammatory drug. And by smoking as much pot as I have, and it's been a lot of pot over the years, I've kind of kept the inflammation down on my skin, which would normally cause aging and wrinkles and stuff. I'm in perfect health. Many of the relatives I've had in my family have died of cancer, much younger than me. Cancer kind of runs in my family. And you would have thought at 69, I probably would have had cancer just because of my genes. My grandmother had breast cancer 3 times, and my mother had breast cancer. Many of my relatives have died of cancer. As I look back now, had I known then what I know now about cannabis, I would have got them to smoke. Just as a little aside, because that's kind of interesting. I have a cousin, very anti-drug, doesn't believe in cannabis, but her cat got cancer. And she came to me and she said, what can I do for him? And I said, you can give him cannabis. It's all over the internet. You put in cat and cancer and cannabis, and you'll see articles where people have been treating their animals with cannabis. Well, the cat was kind of almost dead when she started treating it. It wasn't eating. It was in such pain it didn't want to move. It was just lying in this little dark corner, miserable. She gave it cannabis twice. When I say cannabis, it was a concentrated tincture that was made from organic cannabis, which was concentrated down and down and down. So it was basically almost pure chemical. It was from a doctor. It's called Greenbridge Medical in Santa Monica. So I got this tincture for the cat. Within a day, it was eating. It was moving around. It wasn't in pain. It was actually playing with her.
Wow.
So every day now she's been giving it cannabis. Now, she'd get to a point where she thought it was so successful she gave it too much. She was really bombarded with it. And she called me up and she said, my cat is quivering and shaking. I don't know what it is. And I said, well, gosh, I never heard of anybody quivering and shaking from cannabis, but maybe you're giving it too much. So she cut down and it stopped shaking.
Mm-hmm.
It probably just had got overloaded with the stimulant part of the cannabis.
Right.
But her cat is still alive. It's eating. It's doing well. It may be too late to have prevented it from dying because it was pretty advanced. The people that are treating themselves with cannabis for cancer, it isn't in the final stages. You have to give it a fighting chance.
Right. And probably because it was concentrated, like you said, because I remember in the film, they had a pile of pot saying you would have to smoke literally like 100 pounds to die from it, because you really can't die from smoking pot, right?
Within 15 minutes. No, nobody's ever died from it. There's been not a single recorded case of anybody dying from it. If you smoked 1,500 pounds within 15 minutes, you would die from asphyxiation because you wouldn't be getting any oxygen. That's what would kill you.
Right.
Pot is the most benign medicine around. it does not hurt you. I mean, it can give you a sore throat and screw up your lungs a little bit, but it's doing so much good for your body, and you don't have to smoke it. When you're eating it, there's no downside whatsoever.
What's the best way to eat it?
Well, okay, we're two things. We're talking about preventing cancer, which was what I've done with my life. Smoking is enough. If you're smoking basically every day at some point, you're stimulating your endocannabinoid system enough to keep it healthy and prevent the cancer. Generally speaking, you know, I can't guarantee 100% of the cases. We're all different human beings with different chemistry, but that's the general consensus. If you have cancer, you need to hit it with a bulldozer. You need the heavily, intense, concentrated chemicals, either in an oil, a paste, or a tincture, and you need to do it every day, all day. Now, that sounds a bit daunting,
yeah.
But the doctors who are treating people with cannabis and having a lot of success with it say that you have to keep a certain level in your system as if you were taking an antibiotic. If you're taking tetracycline or something like that,
right.
They say to take it 4 times a day so you're always keeping a level in your system. It's the same if you're treating yourself for cancer or other diseases with cannabis. You can't just smoke a joint in the morning and think that's enough. You actually have to do the tincture probably 3 or 4 times a day. I mean, if you do the tincture, it can last for 5, 6 hours, maybe 8 hours. So you might do it 2, 3 times a day. And you don't need to take so much that you're completely stoned. You just have to do enough so you feel slightly altered. So you still can function, but that will tell you that you have enough in your system to be doing the medicinal healing. Just do enough so you're a little bit high, but not really tripping or anything.
So there's actually doctors that prescribe marijuana to fight cancer.
That's all they do, actually. There are certain doctors that are cannabis doctors that are treating cancer patients. I can't say they have success in 100% of the cases, but the successes they have are stunning. Hergen Rather in Northern California has been doing this for quite a few years, and he's an MD, worked in emergency rooms, and was a typical MD until he discovered that the medical profession, I'm not going to speak for Hergen Rather here, I'm going to speak for generally for cannabis doctors. A lot of them have come to cannabis because the way that most doctors are treating cancer is a dismal failure and is doing more harm than it's doing good, and it's actually killing the patients.
Right.
Even the great successes they talk about where they'll do the chemotherapy and surgery and radiation and somebody's cancer-free, it's not unheard of. In fact, it's fairly frequent that 5 years later they come down with another cancer in the same place or another part of their body, because what the doctors have done to them has actually damaged their body. It screwed up their immune system, and they haven't dealt with the cancer. They haven't dealt with the reason the people got the cancer. So Hergen Rather has one patient, and probably more than that, but he's talked about this one, who was diagnosed with brain cancer 7 years ago. Now, people diagnosed with brain cancer, even with chemotherapy and radiation and surgery, are dead within a year, and sometimes they're dead within weeks or months. This man has been alive for 7 years. He treats himself multiple times a day with concentrated cannabis, and he's healthy, and he's fine, and he's alive. Now, a lot of people could poo-poo that and say, well, maybe he never had cancer. That's usually what the doctors do. Well, obviously, he was misdiagnosed.
Right.
He didn't really have cancer. That's their answer to all this. I'm going to throw one more thing in there, too. My mom was diagnosed with breast cancer probably about 12 years ago, and this was before I believed in any of this alternative therapy, and she said, doctors are stupid. They've killed every other relative in our family who's had cancer. I don't believe them. I'm not going to them. They've diagnosed my cancer. I'm going to treat it myself. Of course, everybody in my family was horrified. My brother and sister and I were going, Mom, you've got to get chemotherapy and radiation. You have to listen to the doctors. You can't just treat this yourself. You're crazy. And she's very stubborn. She's a Jewish mom, and she just does what she wants to do. And she says, look, I'm old. If I die, I die, but I don't believe in doctors, so I'm not going to them. So she would go to doctors periodically to get ultrasound just to see how the tumor was doing. And she did not treat herself with cannabis. We didn't know about it at that time. But by researching on the internet, she found out there were many anti-cancer herbs. Cannabis is not the only one. It is the most powerful because it reacts with our endocannabinoid system. But there are other things. You discovered that Suzanne Summers was doing mistletoe in a concentrated form called Iscador, which you can't even get in this country. You have to get dipped from Switzerland.
Unbelievable.
I know. And she did Asian mushrooms. She did ASIAC tea. She didn't know what was going to work, so she did everything. We would joke because Mom would carry around this box of vitamins with her throughout the day. Every hour or two, she would take this handful of vitamins and minerals and herbs. We all just thought, you know, oh, Mother, you're crazy. She would do coffee enemas. Well, the tumor did not grow for 4 years. It stayed exactly the same size. It didn't get worse. It didn't get better. But she thought she was successful because it wasn't getting any worse. It wasn't killing her. After 4 years, it started shrinking. And the doctor who had been doing the ultrasounds all this time had just been diagnosed with prostate cancer, and he started following what my mother was doing.
Wow.
Yeah, I know. So one of the things about alternative therapies that people have to understand is it doesn't happen overnight. You got the cancer for a reason. You got the cancer because you were overloaded with toxins, stress, bad emotions. emotions. My mother also had never meditated before in her life, but when she got the cancer, she started meditating. She dealt with all the areas of it. She actually dealt with trying to cure what gave her the cancer by making herself healthy. She'd go to raw food retreats and eat nothing but raw food for like 2 weeks and stuff. Clean her system out of all the toxins. And she had had a horrible diet before that. And so this is what also I tell people that are going to treat themselves with cannabis. Do everything. Make yourself healthy again. Go on a vegan or raw food diet. Clean yourself out. Don't just count on the cannabis to cure you when you have a horrible diet and you're under stress all the time. You can only do so much. You have to help it along. So anyhow, that was mind-blowing to me to actually see that happen, to see the fact that she shrunk her tumor. In fact, it never actually went away. It just kind of kept shrinking and she kept up the stuff, so it never became a problem for her. It never was life-threatening in any way or doing any harm to her.
You found out about the benefits of marijuana while this was happening?
Well, I had made another film called Everything Bad is Good, Healing Yourself in a World of Medicine Gone Mad. And in the film, I'd interviewed my mom and other people who were treating themselves successfully with alternative therapies. And while I was making that film, I tried to interview doctors about cannabis, but none would be interviewed. It was still considered kind of crank medicine then. Even the doctors who were doing it were afraid their medical license would be taken away. I couldn't get anybody to go on record. But it became a bit, again, I say, I'm pushy. I didn't give up on it. I said, I'm going to make a film just about this. So after that film, I was determined to make a film just about cannabis and cancer. So I figured I'll get somebody to talk about it. So I found this one doctor, Hergen, rather, who I've talked about before, in Northern California. He had already stuck his neck out, and he was willing to go on record talking about it. And I was thrilled. I thought for a while my whole film would just be this one interview. And he said something quite stunning when I first started interviewing him. He said, everybody has marijuana in their body. Even your dog and cat have marijuana in their body. Every living creature on this earth, except for crustaceans, like lobsters and things, have marijuana in their body. They're born with it. It's called the endocannabinoid system, and it's only been discovered recently. And I went, what? It was like, everybody has marijuana? And he said, the endocannabinoids are the exact same chemical structure as marijuana, and we're born with it. And the endocannabinoids in our body keep us healthy. They're tumor regulators, they're anti-inflammatory, antispasmodic, antibacterial. They have all these functions in the body. But they get worn out, particularly by the amount of pollution and toxins that our bodies are exposed to nowadays. They're called endocannabinoids because when they were discovered, they were the same chemical structure as cannabis, so they called them cannabinoids. Mm-hmm. And when you smoke cannabis, they hook up together. It's like they go, oh, hi, bro. We're right. Twins or husband and wife, whatever. We're going to like hook up and work together. So when you smoke cannabis, or particularly when you do it in tinctures and strong forms of it, it stimulates the endocannabinoids to do their jobs better.
Right.
So really, when they say that cannabis can cure cancer, it's really not the cannabis. It's the cannabis stimulating a system that's already in your body and has been there for millions, probably billions of years.
Right. And could that be one of the reasons why pot was grown all over the place before? Kind of makes sense, right?
Well, you know, it's funny. There's a book called The Biology of Desire, where he talks about the intelligence of plants and how they make themselves useful to us because they want us to help them procreate and help them survive. So certain plants smell really nice because humans like that, and so we plant more of them. His theory in there that cannabis has healing effects on the body because that's something that humans can use, and if humans can use it, we're going to plant it and we're going to create more of it. And there's an intelligence to plants that want to survive and want to procreate, and so they make themselves useful to human beings. Now, the other theory is that THC, which of course is the active ingredient in cannabis that gets you high and has not all, but most of the medicinal effects, is very strong in plants because it protects them from the radiation of the sun. It protects them from being in really hot climates. They don't get burned up and shrivel up. They can actually survive extreme hot temperatures because of the THC in the leaves, which is interesting because the THC is protecting the plants from the radiation of the sun. Radiation, as we know, is a cancer causer. If you get enough x-rays, you're going to get cancer.
Right.
So maybe that's the connection with THC protecting us from cancer. It's something in the plant that protects it from the sun, but it also protects us from the radiation. It's the antioxidant qualities of the plant that may be protecting us from cancer, because all the things that are antioxidant are protecting cell damage and protecting the cells from being destroyed in our body unnecessarily. So it's a miracle plant that it almost is metaphysical. It's almost spiritual. It's almost religious why this one plant would be given to human beings to protect us from so many diseases, to give us pleasure, to increase our enjoyment of food and sex and nature, to make us creative. I mean, all the scripts I wrote while I was on cannabis. It has so many uses. My boyfriend suffers from depression.
Right.
It's his drug of choice.
Sure.
As soon as he comes home, he smokes marijuana and it evens him out. It relaxes him. It makes him feel euphoric. He doesn't do any pharmaceutical drugs. I don't do any pharmaceutical drugs. I've discovered that almost anything I would do a pharmaceutical drug for, I can use cannabis for. And that's why it's illegal. Can you imagine the threat to the pharmaceutical company?
There you go. That's where I was going next. back. Here's a plant that was growing all over the place for thousands, hundreds of thousands of years, perhaps. Enter the government. When did that start?
Cannabis was used in medicines that everybody used right up until the 1930s in the United States. You would actually buy tinctures of cannabis to give to your child when they were sick or when they were just like unable to sleep or they were cranky. It would calm them down. It was very widely accepted. There was no bad connotations with it at all. And the only bad connotation is we've all heard of snake oil that these salesmen would go around the frontier and sell to farmers and things as a cure-all. Mm-hmm. Well, that was cannabis, what we know as snake oil. But you know what? It probably did cure a lot of things. Now, I don't know if it cured snake bites, which is why they called it snake oil,
right.
But it was the cure-all that they used in the frontier. So it was not only legal, it was part of every single medical bag all through the 1800s into the early part of the 1900s.
And what happened?
What happened is they invented miracle drugs, which were made out of chemicals. Henry Ford actually made a car out of hemp, which is a form of cannabis that's non-psychoactive. It was replacing plastic. It was replacing concrete. It was replacing paper. Hemp and cannabis were being used in so many forms that were threatening the industries that had been built up to pollute the earth, the petroleum, the petrochemical industry. All these things were threatened by cannabis. But particularly, it was the fact that miracle drugs had been invented, and suddenly cannabis seemed very old-fashioned. You had the miracle penicillin drugs and things. Most of them were made out of chemicals. And that was the future. Hearst started a campaign against cannabis because he owned paper companies, and hemp was replacing the trees that were being made into paper, and he owned these forests, and so it was a financial threat to him. So he started this campaign about reefer madness in his newspapers. A lot of the members of Congress were dependent on the pharmaceutical companies for donations and the petrochemical companies, so they outlawed not only cannabis but hemp. They didn't even know that cannabis and hemp were the same thing, and it was outlawed with strong objections from the American Medical Association at the time, saying, this is crazy, you're taking away a medicine from us that's very useful, and they ignored them. It was for financial reasons.
So nothing changed?
Nothing's changed. Except people have gotten smarter,
right.
And we're objecting to it now, and we're fighting it now, and we're doing petitions in all of these states to legalize medical marijuana. We're fighting back now because we know what's going on, and thank you, Internet.
Yes, and thank you, government. Of course, the Pentagon created that in secret in the 60s.
Well, what's really doing harm in this country are pharmaceutical drugs. Pharmaceutical drugs are deadly and dangerous, and they've really underplayed the side effects. People go, well, oh, I listened to all those warnings on those TV commercials of all those things it can give you. Well, that's very unlikely it's going to give me cancer and heart attacks and all this stuff. Well, it's not. They've actually underplayed it. Pharmaceutical drugs are far more dangerous than we're ever led to believe. I'll give you an example. I came down with shingles.
What is shingles exactly?
When you've had chicken pox and either your immune system is suppressed or you're under a lot of stress, the chicken pox can reemerge, but they reemerge inside the nerves of your body. And so you get this kind of rash and it's very painful and your nerves become inflamed in a particular part of your body. So I was under a writing deadline. And I just was working day and night and very stressed out, and I came down with shingles. Well, of course, I went to the doctor, and immediately they pumped me full of pharmaceutical drugs. That was their only answer to it. Didn't help whatsoever. So I went to my cannabis doctor. Said, oh my God, yes, we treat shingles all the time with cannabis. 99% of the doctors don't even know this. So he made up a tincture, which I could rub into the rash on my body, which was made of cannabis and something to kind of make it go through the skin with a transporting agent. And it immediately calmed it down, because cannabis is nerve protectant. It's one of the reasons that it helps treat Alzheimer's. It actually protects your nerves from damage. So by rubbing the cannabis in my body and letting it soak through, it calmed the nerves down. It helped heal it. But I was terrified to continue taking the pharmaceutical drugs. I was told by my other doctor, it'll only get worse if you stop taking this. So I continued taking these drugs. And one thing that happened from one drug is I started feeling incredibly depressed.
Right.
And I never get depressed. I mean, not like that. I mean, I just was waking up feeling dead inside. And of course, I see an ad for the drug on television, and it said it can cause suicidal thoughts. It can worsen your mental problems. And this drug was a tranquilizer. This was an antidepressant. This was things that people use when they're depressed that can cause suicidal thoughts. So I stopped taking that. I took another one for about maybe 2 months, and I started going into rages.
Mm.
Everything would just set me off. I'd just be angry. I remember standing in line in the grocery store just in a rage going, I don't even know why I'm angry. Something enraged me, and I have no idea what it was. And of course, I check out the side effects of this drug, and it can cause mood swings, blah, blah, blah. And I was having all of these things. So I immediately stopped doing all the pharmaceutical drugs and just completely went to cannabis. And my shingles started getting better immediately when I started doing the tincture every night and every day and rubbing it in. Those pharmaceuticals were not only harmful, they were unnecessary. I could have completely treated myself with cannabis. And that's bad news for these pharmaceutical companies.
How long ago was that?
probably 4 months ago.
At that point, you were still using pharmaceuticals, even after everything you knew.
I was using cannabis and pharmaceuticals, but I was only rubbing the cannabis on, and I started doing it orally when I stopped doing the pharmaceuticals, and that's what also did the trick. I needed it inside and outside of my body.
And what about now? Are you still doing pharmaceuticals, or are you completely...
I do no pharmaceuticals, absolutely none at all, which is kind of unusual for somebody 69, I have to tell you. They were going, well, aren't you doing anything for your blood pressure? I say, no, the cannabis is lowering my blood pressure.
Right. Are you a kind of wake and bake type of guy?
Not necessarily.
Okay.
Here's the thing about using cannabis to cure something, to treat something. You have to do a lot. That's why people are always saying, my grandmother had cancer and she would smoke joints when she'd get nauseous from her chemotherapy and she still died of cancer. So if it cured cancer, why would she still die? And I'm going, well, you can't just smoke a joint. You have to bombard your system with the chemicals, with the concentrated chemicals. And that's what I did for the shingles. I did the concentrated tincture every day, every night in massive amounts. I was stoned all the time, but I wasn't in pain. It completely got rid of the pain and it was curing it. So normally I don't want to live that way. I don't want to be stoned. I mean, I'd wake up in the middle of the night and I was so stoned, I had to hold onto the walls to make it to the bathroom.
Wow.
It wasn't that bad, but you really have to be high to really kick the disease that you have. Now, having said that, I prefer things that are high in THC. I think with my particular body chemistry, those work best on pain and other things. But a lot of people are in favor of CBD, cannabidiol. That's the chemical in marijuana that does not get you high. It's the opposite of the THC, which is psychedelic. Cannabidiol is the sedative part of cannabis, the one that makes you sleepy, that relaxes you. I like the upper part. But if somebody doesn't want to be high all the time, they should do tinctures that are high in CBD. They have almost all the same medicinal effects. You can give it to your grandmother, and unless she does a lot of CBD, she will not be high at all. She'll feel very relaxed and very calm. I have a friend who's manic depressive, who was doing lithium and Prozac, and of course he was treating his manic depression with a lot of alcohol. For his birthday, I gave him a big bottle of CBD tincture,
right.
And he's a different man now. He says, my God, I don't have as much taste for alcohol anymore. I still do it once in a while. I'll have a martini, but I'm not getting drunk anymore because the CBD is calming me down. He just feels relaxed. He's in real estate, and usually he gets very aggravated by the people he has to deal with. He says, I just let it slide off my shoulders now. The CBD just makes me feel relaxed during the day, and I don't feel high. I just feel relaxed.
Now, you're out in California, where I guess it's a lot more liberal.
Oh, boy.
I'm on the right coast. You're on the left coast.
Oh, boy.
What about people throughout the country? You know, what about somebody in Kansas? Could they get their hands on some of this stuff, or can they get it through the mail? Or
That's a hard one, because legally, you have to be a California resident to get any of this stuff. With Greenbridge Medical, the people that I got my cannabis tincture from, they have people who come to California just to be treated, people with cancer from Kansas and places who can't get it in their state. They can probably buy illegal weed from some dealer if they track them down or ask their friends, but that's probably not going to be enough to treat their cancer. They need the concentrated chemicals, which have to be made organically and under heavy sanitary conditions, because you're treating a disease. You really need it to be medical grade.
Right. So it's only in California?
14, 15 other states now. Colorado is very big. In Colorado, you can get anything, which is great.
Mm-hmm.
But people come to Colorado and they come to California from other states to be treated. And they have to get a residence here. They have to get ID so that they can get their letter from a doctor. And
right.
It's crazy. And all they're doing is trying to treat their cancer.
Yeah.
It's not like they're criminals, for God's sake.
I'm glad you defined endocannabinoid, because I was going to ask you to define that for the listeners. I looked up cannabinoid on Wikipedia. And one of the things I found out was that there's a U.S. patent. And it says here, U.S. patent number 6630507 says on October 7th, 2003, U.S. patent entitled cannabinoids as antioxidants and neuroprotectants was awarded to the United States Department of Health and Human Services.
I don't know why they did that, but if it has no medicinal value, they say, with Schedule 1, then what's all that about?
That's what I was going to ask you. If it's so bad, why is a government patenting it, and why are they saying, wait, we got it, nobody else can have it?
There are a lot of theories going around it that they think that's another way to outlaw it, because if they own it, they can tell you you can't use it and stuff.
Or what do you think, though?
Well, I think it's all futile, the fact that the government is going to copyright it or patent it or do anything like that, because anybody can grow it in their backyard. So really, up yours. It's the type of thing that anybody can make their own medicine. You can grow your own marijuana. You can get recipes off the internet for ways to make it into tincture. That's a little dangerous because you're using some flammable stuff, so you have to be really careful. But you can make your own tincture. You can make your own medicine. You can treat your own cancer. You don't need the pharmaceutical companies. You don't need permission from the government. Of course, that's if you're willing to risk jail in most states. In fact, let me just say, there's another film called Run from the Cure, where Rick Simpson shows people how to make their own tincture. He's in Canada, but he's been arrested and harassed and stuff. It's a good film. It's a little amateurish, but he just made it with what funds they had. If you research the two films, Run from the Cure and What If Cannabis Cured Cancer, you'll get a lot of information, no matter where you live, on what to do
right. And
how to stop being addicted to doctors and pharmaceuticals and to become your own doctor and to take your own health in your own hands with the help of nature and this gift that's been given to us that is just a miracle drug. This is the true miracle drug, and it does no harm. It only does good. Even when it's killing cancer cells, it's not harming the good cells in your body.
Right.
I tell people, smoke a joint, do your health a favor.
With everything that's happening, states becoming more interested in closing their budget gap with anything they can get their hands on, like gambling or marijuana. What do you think? Do you think finally the federal government's going to lighten up? Do you think that the states are going to assert their rights and say, look, if our residents want to smoke pot, if it's legal in our state, then they can do it. Back off, federal government. Do you think that's coming, or do you think we have many, many more years of the federal government playing big brother with nature?
I don't think we should look to the government, local or Washington, D.C., for a cure for this, because they're all in the pockets of the pharmaceutical companies and the cancer industry. They're not going to give up their donations. The pharmaceutical industry will fight us tooth and nail. The only solution, I think, is, and this is an old 60s hippie talking, we stop the Vietnam War by taking to the streets and rising up and just saying, we're not going to do this anymore. And I think the power has to come from the people. The government ain't going to do it because they just want the donations they're getting from pharmaceutical companies. Pharmaceutical companies are the second largest donor to candidates outside of Wall Street.
Right.
And
yeah.
We can see how they've controlled Wall Street, can't we? We're still in the same situation where we could have another collapse from Wall Street. They haven't done a thing. One of the reasons that What If Cannabis Cured Cancer has had a profound effect is because almost everybody in this country now knows somebody with cancer. So we're not just talking about cannabis anymore. We're talking about, did Ted Kennedy have to really die of brain cancer? If he knew about cannabis, his relatives knew about it, and they treated him properly with sufficient amounts for long enough time, would he be alive today? So that's the only other way that I can see of actually changing the current situation, is if it's widely accepted that, you know, folks, what the doctors have been doing so far is not working, except in very rare cases. And if we have a drug here, whether it's illegal or not, that's working, we have to use it. That's the only thing that I think might change it, because politicians have relatives that die of cancer too. So that's the only thing that might emotionally move on that level.
We need an Occupy movement for marijuana.
Occupy cannabis.
Right,
yep.
Exactly. Maybe that's your next film?
Well, no, I'm actually writing a stage musical now on marijuana. I just decided to get it out to the masses with music and dance. We have some endocannabinoid dancers. Should be fun.
Len Richmond, the filmmaker, What If Cannabis Cured Cancer. I want to thank you so much for the time you spent explaining all this to listeners. It's a great film, and looking forward to your Broadway play.
Oh, thank you very much. I'm going to go cure my cancer right now. Not cure it, prevent it. I'm going to go prevent my cancer right now.
Thanks, Len.
You're welcome.